He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Is it rolling, Bob? Is it rolling, Bob? Is it rolling, Bob?
And that's Dylan famously asking as he's about to record To Be Alone With You on the Nashville Bob? Skyline album, whether Bob Johnston, his producer, is rolling. The reason I play it. Anyway, that's what we sounded like for the first 10 minutes of the show yesterday. Crash swears it wasn't his fault, but I don't know. You believe him?
No, I don't. In fact, someone tweeted us amid that, and they said it was the best 7 minutes we had ever done.
Welcome to the program. No more screw-ups. It's Friday, Black Friday, March the 13th. Now, I'm not sure that Friday the 13th is unlucky, but I do know that Friday the 13th at least is a Friday. So I'm willing to take my chances. But I tell you, folks, I will be criticizing what I characterized on Fox and Friends this morning as the president's relatively tepid response to the attempted assassinations of the two cops in Ferguson yesterday. I think the president should have taken a page from his own attorney general. I think Eric Holder stepped up to the plate and really nailed it when he called it, he called the assassins or the attempted assassins punks. The president instead went on to Kimmel and was kibitzing. I thought that he missed an opportunity there, but I'll get to that. I'll circle back to that whole issue. But I first of all, I want you to hear about the rap sheet of the 16-year-old ringleader, that girl gang that mugged the other 15-year-old girl in the Brooklyn McDonald's yesterday, and about their family backgrounds. Before I get into that, though, that whole issue, it was really very aggravating, having to do with that McDonald's beatdown, the girl gang beatdown, is how none of the adults in the McDonald's thought to intervene, didn't risk anything. If anything, they whipped out their cell phones and took pictures, took videos. Our favorite council member, Jermani Williams from Brooklyn, is on the line now. I was impressed by his statements on the issue, and I welcome him back to the program as I always do. Council member, first of all, welcome back. Happy Friday the 13th. You made some eloquent statements about the adults in that McDonald's yesterday. I want you to share them with us, if you would.
Well, thank you so much for having me. Always a pleasure to be on. Again, I was horrified, like everyone watching that. And then, I just want to say I backed up so I can think about it. And oftentimes, I'm not sure if these things are becoming more prevalent or we're being desensitized and it going so virally and all people want to do is put it on videos. It's kind of irrelevant because we have to act, but I want to make sure we put it in perspective. What struck me the most was the lack of action from anyone in that scenario. They didn't even bother to call the police. They just videoed it. And I think that was probably the thing that struck me the most.
So what does that tell you? What does that mean in terms of soul? What does that mean in terms of sensitivity?
I'm not sure. Again, I grew up in New York City, and unfortunately, these kind of things happened. I do remember them happening pretty often, actually, but they weren't put on virally. And I think people may be becoming too sensitized to this. Someone pointed out we watch these kind of fights on reality TV all the time. There was a fight similarly with a different group of people who looked completely different in Long Island. It was videoed and also just as vicious. But what is striking to me is that we have to, one of these things has to be a call to action. We always talk about personal responsibility, which of course we must have, but we also have to create a social network that can catch some of these kids before this foolishness continues. And so we keep reacting to it, but are we responding to it is the question. And I want to resist the knee-jerk reaction. Of course we need police there, but they come after the fact. I want to see what happens before the fact. The police are not the ones who stood by and did nothing. They're not the ones that closed after-school programs so these kids have McDonald's as they hang out unsupervised after school. They have to be held accountable completely. But what are we doing for the social fabric that sometimes catches kids in some neighborhoods, but in neighborhoods like in Flatbush and the ones I represent don't have it?
That issue of social fabric, I want to circle back to that. Jermani Williams, the New York councilman, is my guest. I just want to just put it in a little bit of context, that the videotaping thing. When I dumped my motorcycle in Fort Lee last summer. I went down and a bunch of people came running to my help. I think it was like four guys came to help me lift the big heavy Harley off my leg. Three of them, instead of helping me, whipped out their cell phones and started taking videos of me. So it's not unique to Flatbush and to this incident. But you said the social fabric, and I want to circle back to there, Johnny, because you know how the high regard we hold you. You have the ringleader being arrested. She's 16 years old. She has a one-year-old child. She's been arrested six times since she turned 16 years old last summer. Most recently, just February 3rd, she stabbed her brother in the arm and pled guilty to disorderly conduct. You know, the failure to those adults inside the McDonald's to intervene to stop that violence, that's sickening. But I think the real problem here is the families of the young perpetrators. As I predicted, no dads in these homes. I mean, isn't that the central issue when you talk about social fabric, that the family is just disintegrated? Isn't that issue a deep and destructive issue that should be addressed, Germani?
Well, one, I want to make sure, I also am concerned that their names were released and they were minors in the paper.
Yeah, that was kind of bugging me, too. I agree with that.
But I think that, yes, to everything you said, but that's part of it. So we have to figure out what's going on in the family. This child, they're still children. So this child is 16 years old with a one-year-old and has been arrested, rearrested. So if the family failed, the community failed, apparently, the school failed, they had her arrested and didn't provide her any help, then there's so many parts there that I'm just...
But what about the father? You can't walk away from the fathers. There was a man that brought this child into the world, and he has some responsibility. That's why you need a father's name on every birth certificate.
I agree. My mother was a wonderful single parent. I think I turned out okay. But I think it's best to have a two-parent household, no doubt about it. But I do want to say from things that I heard the mother say, she also asked for help for her child. She said her child was arrested six times and released. What's happening? And so I think we keep thinking about law enforcement. But what happened after she got arrested? Did someone address whatever concerns is happening to this? I assume she was 13, 14 years old, still a child, still able to receive the assistance she needs, and goes ignored until she's 16 and unfortunately may kill someone or herself. We have to make sure that we are paying attention to our young people, and we throw words around like gang member and this and that usually tries to make sure we're not viewing them as human children. And this child needs help. She must be held accountable for the wickedness that occurred. But if we don't provide the assistance needed, how is it going to stop? If police alone and law enforcement alone would stop it, it would have been stopped already.
You know, Germani Williams, I honor you, your sensibilities, and I appreciate you coming. I know how busy you are this morning. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
All right, man. You know, that's I keep coming back there, Noam. I'm telling you that for instance, I'm going to talk later about the excessive use of force by cops in urban America, and which is a problem. I'm going to talk about the attempted assassination of those cops. There's a whole different issue, and I think the president made a mistake conflating the two or putting them two as, you know, one is part of the same problem. I think the president was wrong. But before I get there, I have to come back, and I understand that, you know, I can raise this issue and I don't have an easy solution to the problem. But I swear to God, as I sit here today, I'm telling you that I don't know what the percentage is, but it's more than half of the reason for all of the problems we have in urban America is the absence of fathers in the home. Where's the father to tell that child, you know, get straight? I mean, how can you have a life? How can you be arrested six times between now and last summer? Six times. How can you stab your own brother in your own home? Where is the dad? Where is the family responsibility? And I swear to God, I come back to this, and I'm not picking on anybody. But when you have organizations that are keen to leap on an issue like excessive police violence or police force, and totally ignoring why the children are in the streets in the first place, shame on them. That's where we have to start. That's where you have to have a massive approach to, you know, getting people's heads wrapped around the reality of what exists in this country and these families today. There are no families in three quarters of these homes, in these households. You have a grandmother and a mother and a bunch of children. And she's got a one-year-old kid, the 16-year-old. So what chance does she have? What chance does that child that she has brought into the world have? And where are the people to speak out on this issue? And why doesn't the president make this central, a central focus, to the rest of his presidency? This is the issue that will condemn a generation or more to melancholy lifestyles that have cycles of this 15-year-old having a child, and she's the daughter of a 30-year-old, and the granddaughter of a 45-year-old, and the great-great-granddaughter of a 60-year-old. At what point does it stop? At what point do we recognize what that we can ignore it, and we ignore it? You know why we ignore it? Because it doesn't affect our lives unless and until you have a situation where on YouTube they post viral videos of sick girls practically killing one of them and no one doing anything about it. No dads.
Geraldo, the truth behind the story for New York. Live, local, on it. 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Friday the 13th of March. Friday the 13th. Are you a person who believes in superstition?
No. How about you?
None at all.
No.
The 13th floor, none of that bothers you?
No, none of that does.
I don't have the obsession with the bad luck number, but I do love 7-Eleven, my lucky numbers. You know, they've always been 11-7, 7-Eleven. I don't know why. Maybe because of blackjack. I don't know. But I whenever I look at the clock, for instance, and it's 7-Eleven by chance,
right?
I just like, I rub it for good luck. Just
so you sort of believe a little
bit. I sort of believe a little bit. And, you know, what I don't do is scoff at other people's superstitions either. I don't want to be the dope that says, oh, yeah.
Nothing will ever happen to me on Friday the 13th.
That bucket will never fall on my head under that ladder. Mike in Westchester, hey, thanks for calling, man. And I appreciate, ladies and gentlemen, the lines are alight at 866-ERALDO. I haven't even given out the number, and you're... you are engaged. Why are you engaged? Because you are the smartest, most compassionate, sometimes the most passionate and angry, but intelligent audience in Radio Land today, and I appreciate you. And Mike in Westchester, you're first. What's up?
Oh, boy, I'm happy to be first. I've never called a radio show in my life.
All right, dude, you're on.
Well, I'm listening to you, and you know, it's not rocket science to know or have the sense that the reason that there are so many single parent families is a result of the social welfare system.
You're partially correct. I agree.
Partially? I think I'm 100% correct.
Well, I think that, and I appreciate the call. I believe that you have a system now. I go back to my own experience where my housekeeper, my 45-year-old housekeeper, was the grandmother of a 30-year-old who was the mother of a 15-year-old who was pregnant. And the parent and grandparent urging the child to terminate the pregnancy, not to go through with it, or at the very least to, and I'm not saying it in a way that's guaranteed to be pleasant to the ears of those of you who oppose abortion, but put the child up for adoption. Do something so the child will have a life. The child, on the other hand, after consultation with her contemporaries in school, came to the conclusion, this is the lifestyle I want. I know that once the child is born, the child will be taken care of with the various, it's not called aid to dependent children anymore, but it is some similar program where you can have a fairly decent lifestyle. You can get your housing paid, you get food supplements, you get various cash benefits. You can, with the safety net, as the caller, the first time caller accurately describes, you can have an alternate lifestyle. On the other hand, if you do have a husband, father, figure in the home, it's a much more difficult process to get the government to be the surrogate dad. That's the reason the names are not being put on the birth certificate. That's why dads are disappearing. That's why 3 out of every 4 black children, 2 out of every 4 Latino children are being raised without a dad in the home with an unwed mother. I mean, there may be a man. Obviously, there's a man who passes through, at least as Herman Badillo used to say, you know, that the guy is showing up because the women keep getting pregnant.
My point is, this is where you need to have a civil rights movement. You have to have a civil rights movement that, yes, we fight against injustice and prejudice and Jim Crowism and segregation and unequal treatment. We fight against the system. We fight against the man. But the battle has to start internally. That, I think, is where the real 21st century battleground will be for the civil rights movement. It will be an internal, intramural, interfamily, intrafamily. We need to bring the dads back. That's where I think civil rights can be gained. There's no doubt. You know, your dad may have been a pain in the ass, if you're listening. And you know how he used to cut down on my liberty. He used to make me work. He used to do this or that. The fact of the matter is, he was a guide to you, and he gave you some stability that, absent the dad, with the mother's trying to be father and mother, and the grandmother's trying to be or the surrogate father, it's not going to work. You're not going to have that same defense. I want my daughters, for instance, and they know in their heart that they never have to rely on another man because they've got me. They have me, then they go forward with confidence to deal with the other brats in the world. Don't touch that dial. We're going to talk about this for a while, and then I'm going to go to Ferguson and talk about the problem of cops and communities.
Live, local, on it, 866 Geraldo, where New York comes to talk, 77 WABC.
37 minutes after 10 o'clock. Right here on 77 WABC, Geraldo here, along with Noam Layden. In about 15 minutes or so, I'll turn my attention to the attempted assassination of those cops in Ferguson, Missouri, and the response by the president and his attorney general, the outgoing attorney general, Eric Holder, to the outrageous, the hideous crime. But something a lot less intense, maybe less sexy to talk about. When I was growing up, and I acted out, I did something wrong. I don't know about you, Noam, but my mom would always say, wait until your father gets home, or wait until I tell your father. And it was not that my dad was a disciplinarian per se, but it was an admonition that definitely had an impact. You knew that was going to be the ultimate arbiter of your fate. You didn't want to disappoint your dad. You didn't want to make your dad angry. He's a guy that's getting up at 4:15 every morning to put food on the table and put clothes on your back, you know, to work in the cafeteria of Republic Aviation in those days. But I lament that equation, that phenomenon, does not exist in 3/4 of urban black families and half of Latino families. You don't have that because the dad's not there. You know, but where's the dad? I don't know where the dad is. Some are in prison. It's true. Others are just irresponsible. And others, and going back to how the social safety network has screwed up urban families, are just on the down low because they don't want to take the responsibility financially when the government will step up to the plate. But it is absolutely lamentable, and I get your questions and comments about it. But right now, I want you to meet someone who has an idea to deal with this situation. It's easy to talk about the problem, to mention the problem. What are you going to do about it? Coach Stefan Lin is the founder of the Bronx Fatherhood Training Center, Dare to Dream. Coach Stefan Lin joins us right now. Coach Lin, how are you?
Oh, thank you, my friend. Very well, thank you. And we really, truly appreciate this opportunity.
Let me just quote you. Taking on the role of a responsible father dedicated to ensuring that his children have opportunities and strength in making their dreams come true require faith, sacrifice, patience, commitment, and unconditional love. These are the keys to success, writes Coach Lin. Tell me a little bit more. How are you going to deal with this epidemic of absentee dads?
Well, Geraldo, as you know, we've been in this business for a little while because it was foretold years ago, over 20 years ago. We knew that we saw the trend, and we saw that families and children were coming up, particularly in the communities that you mentioned earlier, without fathers. We saw that their the actions and the negligence of the father not being there was causing chaos throughout the community, but it was not addressed, if you will. It was mulled over and talked about kind of as a second thought. So we kept pushing. And when President Obama came on in his administration, as you know, it was a mainstay in his message that fathers have to get involved. So we stepped up our game. And Geraldo, our motto is simple: fatherhood through deeds, not words. And for years, we've heard nothing but words, nothing but talking about it. Let's talk about this fatherhood issue.
So how do you deal with it, Coach? Then tell us how practically you implement what I think is a very necessary philosophy.
Well, first thing that we have to do is get the fathers actively involved, and that's through the deeds. You're going to do a lot of dishes. You're going to talk to your kids on a constant basis. You're going to prioritize your kids above all things. And that's what we've done here at the Fatherhood Training Center and across the country as we're doing our trainings, really showing the fathers how to do it.
So how do you get the dads back? How do you bring them in?
Well, you know, we've been blessed. Our message, and they want to, Geraldo. A lot of fathers out there, they know that they're a father. You know, the kids aren't having themselves, and the mom, we don't have a lot of artificial inseminations, if you will. So there is a father there. It's just a matter of what does he do when he gets that blessing? And sad to say, because we've fallen off, we have not had a guide. We've seen over and over and over again where fathers say, Coach, I never had a father. I never saw a man do the things that you're talking about. So instead of us just talking it to them, we're showing you. Let me show you how to do the kids' laundry on a regular basis. Let me show you how to interact with the teacher so that you're involved in the kids' education. Let me show you how to maintain a house just in case you have to raise the kids by yourself. And because we've taken that approach of let me step in as your father would have, it's really been effective.
So where is the Fatherhood Training Center exactly?
Located right in the heart of the South Bronx. And we did that for many reasons. We needed to go where the cure was needed the most. And it's on Burnside Avenue, as I said before, in the South Bronx. And we created, as it is, a training center. But when you come here, you're going to get trained in cooking, which is one of my favorite stations. You're going to cook some meals because we all know that the kitchen is the heart of the house. You hear a lot of information in the kitchen. And if you're not there, you're going to miss out on a lot of things. And I'm not talking about going in the refrigerator getting some food. I'm talking about doing the dishes, cleaning up, talking, computer lab, gym, library, all the things that a father would imagine having.
All right, so how does an absentee dad start his road back to his family through the Fatherhood Training Center? I mean, how do we reach you?
Well, of course, they go through deedsdrivendads.com. That's our website.
Deedsdrivendads.com.
That's it. And the absentee fathers from all walks of life, too. I love that you said that. It's not just a situation that's happening in the poor neighborhoods, which is seemed to have been the thought. This is an epidemic that goes across all economic lines, all nationalities. We're having issues with fathers not being involved in their children's lives.
Coach Lynn, I got to let you go, but I really appreciate what you're doing. You're doing exactly what needs to be done, and I really appreciate it.
It's a done deal. We're going to win this battle. Don't worry about it. We're almost there.
All right. Deeds-driven
dads.
Deedsdrivendads.com.
That's it.
Thanks, Coach Lynn.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. See, that's what we need. But, you know, he says, I think Coach Lynn gives the president too much credit. I think the president has mentioned it, but not often enough. I would have made it, if it was me, I would have made it a new civil rights movement. Just couch it that way. Let's get a million man march for that. To reunite fathers and their children. To patch the broken family model. You definitely fare better when there's an intact family. It's statistics. It's not me. Anyway, enough about me. New York City, Tom is on the line. What's up, Tom? What are you thinking about, buddy?
Hey, Geraldo. Hey, you know, I just saw that video for the first time on YouTube. I watched it, and it was hard to watch. I got to tell you, what I noticed from it was I saw a whole room of black people, some older ones as well. And at the end, when she was about to be killed, when she was already unconscious and they were stomping her into dust, it was a Latino guy, looked like a Puerto Rican guy who saved her life, who basically just got in front of her, so over her body.
So what's your reaction, Tom?
My reaction is, where were the Black Lives Matter signs that we see all over, you know, Wisconsin, you know, Ferguson? Yeah. I didn't see any Black Lives Matter signs, and I saw a whole room of black people beating a black girl to death, and come on, people. I mean, you know, it's a good show you're doing on this, but if it wasn't for that guy, she'd be dead.
I can't disagree with you. In Brooklyn, Bill's on the line. Hey, Bill.
Yeah, how you doing? I really called about Ferguson, but as far as the birth certificate with the father, you know, half these kids, 15, 16, they may not even know who the father is. And maybe the father's a bigger criminal than the mother. This has to go down to the Al Sharptons of the world, like your guest that you just had on. Let them go into the community. Let them teach the people. Let them show them morals. Let them deal with these young mothers. It's really, unfortunately, the burden is on the women not to get pregnant at 15, 16. Sharpton's in a perfect place. Get him out of his brewery. Get him into the
community. I'm not disagreeing with you either. I'm not disagreeing with you either, Bill. I think that it should be the new civil rights movement. Here's Frank in Long Island. What's up, Frank?
Geraldo, I love your show. Like Howard Cosell used to say, telling it like it is.
Okay, brother.
Whether it's popular or not, you just lay it out there. Look, years ago, Geraldo, you might have remembered, Barack Obama gave a speech on Father's Day, and he mentioned how important it is to get the father back in the family. And you know what Barack Obama got for it? He was lambasted by the black community and by some prominent people came out. I think Jesse Jackson.
He did. Jesse Jackson said, I don't need to be lectured by Barack Obama.
He talked down to us. So it's a tricky spot.
It's a tricky spot, but that's where you need a profile in courage. I think that's where he'll make it. Thanks, Frank, for the call. That's where Barack Obama will make history, you know, by starting this new civil rights movement. Maybe we'll start it right here on 77 WABC. It's
live and local, the Tri-State's most important issues with Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Our response to the reaction by the President of the United States and the Attorney General of the United States to the attempted assassination of the two cops in Ferguson, Missouri. Was that attempted assassination, could that be linked? This is a very provocative and troubling question. Could the assassination fairly be linked to the very mild response to some of the violent protesting against police violence in Ferguson, Missouri? In the way that a link was made, tenuous, but I think unmistakable, between the assassination of the two cops in New York and the worst of the rhetoric of the protesters against police violence. I think that is a question in Ferguson also. Was that assassination attempt green-lighted, in a sense, by some of the sloppy language, not from the people that run the country, but certainly from the people, some of the activists who run the demonstrations in Ferguson? They were way over the top. The president's response, on the other hand, kind of tepid. You have the president on Kimmel, don't you, Jimmy Kimmel?
I think the crash has it.
You have that crash? Can you roll
what was
that?
Happening in Ferguson was you had city government telling the police department and that stop more people. We need to raise more money. Folks would get stopped. They'd get tickets. Then they'd have to wait in line to pay it, take a day off work. Folks would lose their jobs. In some cases, they were thrown in jail because they didn't have enough money for the fines. And then they'd get fined for that. Just a disregard for what law enforcement's supposed to do. I said this at Selma. It is not unique, but it's also not the norm. And we've got to constantly, when we're thinking about issues of racial progress or any kind of issue, recognize that things get better, but there's still more work to do.
See, my beef with that is a separate conversation from the condemnation of the murderous attempt to kill the two cops and to conflate them. It makes it look as if one is a response to the other. They tried to kill the cops because of the tickets and the fines and all the rest of it. He made a mistake. His emphasis was all wrong. We'll talk more about it next hour. I knock on wood. I generally don't walk under ladders. Friday the 13th, though, has never really been a big boogeyman for me. I like lucky numbers, not unlucky numbers. But, you know, I think that most superstitions have some historical grounding. I'm not exactly sure, but my feeling is that over time enough things happened that they... How else did they generate? I think that Friday the 13th has to do with Jesus and the Last Supper. And are there 13 people in that picture?
I know knocking on wood, isn't that knocking on the cross?
I think it is. I think it is. Anyway, happy Friday the 13th. No matter what you think of Friday the 13th, lucky or unlucky, it is Friday. That is undeniable. That means the weekend is upon us. And the weather forecast, Mr. Layden?
Tomorrow it's going to rain and then the 50s. And then Sunday it'll be cloudy, but no rain and in the high 40s.
So are we done with frigid weather?
It looks that way. If you look ahead, you're not seeing anything colder than the 40s.
I am having a frigid response to the president's reaction to the police shooting in, that was kind of a tortured segue.
Clumsy, very clumsy, yeah.
But I'm serious in my intent, however unartful my presentation. I didn't like the way the president handled the Ferguson shooting. First of all, he had some fun on Jimmy Kimmel. Let him have some fun. What happened?
You know, they do this thing on Jimmy Kimmel where stars come on and read the meanest tweets that they get. So last night it was the president reading the meanest tweets that he gets.
The people who already don't like the president are criticizing him for coming here. President Bush would get the same thing when he did TV shows. It's the nature of the job, I guess. I think it's important to remember that presidents are people too. And from time to time, we give celebrities a chance to read some of the mean things people tweet about them. And tonight, we extended that same courtesy to our commander-in-chief.
Obama's hair is looking grayer these days. Can't imagine why, since he doesn't seem to be one bit worried about all that's going on. Is there any way we could fly Obama to some golf course halfway around the world and just leave him there? Well, RW's Surfer Girl, I think that's a great idea. A 30 rack of Coors Light is $23 now at SunStop. Thanks, Obama. How do you make Obama's eyes light up? Shine a flashlight in his ears. That's pretty good. Somebody send Obama some life hacks on how to be a good president. Ha ha. Like I bet that would help. LOL. You know, the LOL is redundant when you have the ha ha.
Not bad.
Yeah.
But he is charming. But, you know, and I like when they go on. I like when they do things that humanize them, the presidents. And he spoke of George W. Bush, who did, you know, his own fair share of those television appearances. But I really am, and I'm going to get to your calls momentarily, 866-Geraldo. And if you still want to talk about the family issue, I will, because I think they are linked. But I just want to make this point about the president and the way he responded. First of all, I was pleasantly surprised by the Attorney General's response. It was prompt. It was strong. He labeled the cop shooting in Ferguson heinous. And he called the shooter or shooters a damn punk trying to sow discord. You got that?
My brother is a retired law enforcement officer. And he always tells me that cops have the right, you know, to come home at night, you know? And that's exactly right. What happened last night was a pure ambush. This was not someone trying to bring healing to Ferguson. This was a damn punk, who was trying to sow discord in an area that is trying to get its act together.
See, I love that. To me, when you call somebody a punk, you are real. That is as bad as it gets. I know, understand that to some the word isn't as egregiously insulting as it is to a street person like me, but you call somebody a punk, you are really condemning them in an unequivocal way. That message gets out there that shooting cops is a crime against society, never justified, relentlessly punished, and you are a piece of crap. You get no kudos from me. You're not furthering my desire to have fewer acts of unarmed civilians shot by cops. What you're doing is adding to the violence, making us all look bad. You are a punk. And therein lies my problem with the president's response. He used in another portion of the Kimmel appearance weak words. Unacceptable. Unacceptable.
It wasn't unacceptable.
Of course it was unacceptable, for God's sakes. Unacceptable is when you cut in line ahead of someone in the checkout counter. That's unacceptable. Not when you try to kill cops. You lessen the impact of your rage against the cop shooter by putting it in the context of another thing the president said, legitimate grievances. He talked about legitimate grievances as if the assassination was a slight excess in an otherwise orderly protest. Legitimate grievances. What in the world does legitimate grievances have to do with trying to kill cops? It's not an excess. It is an intolerable act by a punk of violence. The president should have condemned that in Eric Holder type language in the same way he should have condemned. Remember when the stepfather of Michael Brown called on the protesters to burn it down? Burn it down? The president didn't, though. And I think that this being too cool for school is totally inappropriate in this context. I think there's a legitimate issue. Nobody can deny it, that cops sometimes use excessive force against unarmed minority men. My problem is that the president demonstrated hesitation to condemn unequivocally the violence against cops. These are separate issues. He must be clear about his support of police, the difficulty of urban policing. I don't accuse him, as some on my network at Fox News, of fanning the flames of unrest. I don't accuse the president of that. But I do accuse him of doing too little to extinguish the flames of unrest by pointing out that the president of the United States stands shoulder to shoulder with the police in the United States. Here's Bill in Brooklyn. What's up, Bill? What are you thinking about?
Hey, Bill, just quickly, I hope this gets to the presidency. He's got to step in. I mean, he's a black man. Who else are they going to listen to but not him? God forbid, and I pray that there is not a reprisal from the white side of the line into the protesters, and a couple of them get randomly shot. It'll ignite the whole country.
I agree, and let's pray that it never, ever gets to that. Thanks, Bill, for the call. Here's Ray in Queens. What's up, Ray? What are you thinking about, buddy? Ray, you got to turn the radio off, man.
From the white side of the line.
All right, I don't know. You there, Ray? I don't know.
He's listening to a good show, whatever.
Yeah, whatever it is. Hey, Jack, you there, Jack?
Yeah, how you doing?
What's up, man?
Good. First of all, as you always say, you're Jewish. 13th is a lucky number.
13th is a lucky number.
For Jews, really.
For Jews.
Who knew?
Okay,
yeah,
who knew?
So the bar mitzvah at 13.
That's right, true.
And I don't know, there's a few other places where 13 is good.
You know, you talk about viral videos. I'm so sad that I never videotaped my bar mitzvah. It was such a great
bar mitzvah.
I had a great bar mitzvah. It was all Puerto Rican Catholics. It was great.
Yeah, also the viral video. Everyone, it used to be everyone did action. Now everyone wants to be the reporter that puts out the hit video.
Right, I agree. And that's unfortunate. So, Jack, have a happy day. I appreciate the call. Thank you. 16 minutes after 11 o'clock. You want me to tell you the story of my bar mitzvah?
No. I'm curious. Nah. I actually want you to do the half tour all over.
We welcome to our studio high above Madison Square Garden, Bailey Melton. There's Bailey and Meredith Melton. Hi. Now, what are you guys doing here? I know, but from where?
Mississippi.
Where? What town?
Oxford, Albright.
Oh, are you university people? And you went to school there. It was, you know, Shep Smith, my colleague, has a home there in Oxford, Mississippi. Yeah, he's awesome. A big man in town. We love Shep. And Bailey and Meredith, we welcome you to the big show.
New York's biggest issues right now. This is Geraldo, 77 WABC.
23 minutes after 11 o'clock on this Friday, the 13th. Thank God it is Friday. A warmish weekend heading your way, though Noam says it'll rain tomorrow, so better rain than snow. I'm going to try skiing. At least I'm going to take Sol. Eric and I are going to take Sol up to Jiminy Peak. I don't ski anymore after I lost my foot to that botched back surgery performed at the Hospital for Special Surgery. Oh, did I say that?
Did you mention their name again? How about snowboarding? You know, then you're not on two skis.
Maybe or... snowboarding. Yeah, I may try. But, you know, last time I was up there, the guy at the ski shop said, listen, we teach GIs who've lost their leg to an IED how to ski. So I figured that if they could do that, I mean, it's sort of like that. I mean, why don't I relearn?
I don't see this weekend ending well.
That's the other thing. Especially Friday the 13th.
That's right, true.
But the guy did say it's lucky for Jews, so I'm gonna incorporate that. Hi, Joan in Flushing. Thank you very much for calling.
Hi, Geraldo. I'd like to comment on the gentleman that you had a little while ago regarding the welfare and bringing the fathers back into the picture.
Right.
Yeah. It all sounds so good, but it's so unrealistic. Why would a father want to come back into a family when the woman is getting health care, food stamps, clothing allowance, rental paid, cash, cell phones, bills paid for her? Why on earth would he want to come in and let's say he makes $25,000 a year. Do you think she would really be able to live like that?
You know, I think that you put your finger on the pulse of the problem, Joan. I congratulate you. I only urge this. Why not take that frustration that comes from your sentiment that, you know, look at all that they are getting. See, I would have a program designed to keep the family together. In other words, the Geraldo social safety net would be the opposite of the Obama social safety net. I wouldn't have a program or programs designed to take care of the woman alone. I'd have the program designed to reward the father, the man, to come home. All right, if you come home, you get you make $25,000 a year, we're going to give you another $150 a week, whatever it is, something to make it more, and I appreciate your call, Joe, I'm very thoughtful. More attractive to be a father, more attractive to have the family unit intact. You can do it. You can definitely design a program. Just be practical about it. See, people criticize me when I say you take a urban kid. That kid has good attendance, perfect attendance in school. I'm going to give that kid a cash reward. You show up in school every day and you show me at the end of the term, I'm giving you $100. People say, oh, you're giving them money, Chris Rock has a joke about it. You're supposed to do that. I know you're supposed to do that, but you're not doing that, and you got to be practical. I'm a pragmatic idealist. I'm not a pie-in-the-sky kind of person. I believe that you can that's why I want to start with the birth certificate. First, you start with the responsibility on the dad's shoulders, and then you take these next steps, these more bold steps, and they're going to be very difficult steps because of this instinct not to reward conduct that is should be expected. But I would reward it anyway. I would reward the kid for a perfect attendance. I would reward the kid for grades. I would reward the parents for showing up at the PTA meetings together. I think that that's the way. Do it with love and kindness and generosity. Make your pragmatism work rather than punishing. What's that going to do? I mean, like these crazy, where are all the black men? Where are all the black men? Where are all the 19-year-old black men, 21-year-old, 23-year-old high school dropout black men? Where are they? They're in jail or they're pushing racks in the garment center. God bless the ones that are pushing racks in the garment center. At least they're showing up and doing something positive. But when you put people in jail for these lame drug charges, I mean, that's, you're guaranteeing that the woman is going to go the other direction with the kids and the father's going to be on his own. He's going to live his life and his life is going to be one that's going to be a circular life. He's going to be in jail, out of jail, in jail, out of jail, out of jail, got to do something, sell drugs. You get away with it for 3 days, you get caught, back in jail, come out again. Now you're going to go to jail for twice as long. Now three times, you know, I think you got to start with pot. Totally decriminalize it.
Well, they've essentially done that in New York. In Brooklyn, for sure they have. Kenneth Thompson's not going to prosecute those guys.
Hopefully I'll be around long enough to see the social impact of that.
Yeah, and now if you're caught with a baggie in your pocket, they just hand it back to you in a ticket, the equivalent of a traffic ticket. So.
Wayne in New York. Hey, Wayne, what's up?
Oh, hello, Geraldo.
Thank you for calling.
And thank you. First off, I just want to say that you are still probably one of the most elegant and eloquent people that are...
What a guy, Wayne. I appreciate it. But so are you. Tell me why you called.
I just make that stuff up. Here's Friday the 13th story.
Okay.
In my shop here, I walked out to my vehicle, and Friday the 13th, 1997... there was a black cat in my car.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. So I threw it out and came back on Saturday, and the cat was in my shop. So kicked it out. And my daughter was 3 years old at that time. And I took her to church on Sunday, Sunday school, and I tried to get her to get rid of the cat. And,
oh, man, Wayne, I'm not going to get the end of the story. I feel terrible.
Why? And on iHeart.com, we are 77 WABC. The sound of the city, Geraldo, where New York comes to talk. 77 WABC.
37 minutes after 11 o'clock on this Friday, the 13th of March. The Dow is stinking it up, down 250 points, erasing the gains from yesterday. I don't know what makes it go up. I don't know what makes it go down. I think it's all these traders. You just don't trade. Don't try to guess which way the market is going. You just get a bunch of sourists for it. Still no arrests in Ferguson, Missouri, the attempted assassination of those two cops. The cops were both released from the hospital. They were shot in front of everybody. They're standing in front of the police department. You had protesters gathered there. You had plenty of news media. Then the four shots, rang out. Two cops fell. The injuries, though, I guess not serious enough for them to require continued hospitalization. Both cops have now been released from the hospital. No arrests yet. Now, when we left you, Wayne was telling us his Friday the 13th story. Marty, I don't know, did you get the rest of that story? We're all like, you know, cliffhanger here. What happened?
Well, I just got off the phone with Wayne. He finally finished the story. and it seems this is the punchline, so get ready for it. When his daughter went out to the car to get rid of the black cat, she didn't get rid of the black cat. She kept it, and they still have the cat 17 years later.
All right.
So this is
a nice ending.
Right. This is a good Friday the 13th
Right.
Story.
I thought he was going to say the cat, he went bankrupt. Right.
Exactly.
Anyway, I'm glad.
His wife left him.
Wayne, I'm glad to hang on to that cat. In Princeton, Linda's on the line. Hi, Linda.
Hello, Geraldo. Buenos dias. Listen, the gentleman that you had on speaking about fatherhood, I only wish he had come into the white neighborhoods in the 1950s. And what I'd like to say is I think it's a miracle that black families have managed to sustain themselves as well as they have, given the adversities on many levels. But the first bully I met in my life was my mother, who was overwhelmed by having had six children with no support. An ineffectual father. I don't blame either of my parents, but I was out of school 60 days a year to protect my younger siblings from my mother's wrath, an ungratified wife.
Wow. I think that's another story, though.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I appreciate that.
But if you add racism and economic...
So did you stay close to your siblings? Just curious.
Because I was the eldest, I was put in charge. I had all that responsibility with no power. Okay, and I am alienated from three of them probably who resent what they thought was a glamorous position as the eldest. It was awful. At any rate, I have been hospitalized numerous times for depression, and I have gotten to see the inner workings and the family pathology of white middle and upper middle class families. And the dysfunction in black families is, in a sense, less than, given the privilege, what I've seen in some white families. So my recommendation, and it's a small one, is to employ a lot of the school psychologists and social workers and other administrative staff in training for family life, for raising children, and starting at an early age with children in schools. Because most of the children in schools are coming from two-parent families that where there is continual fighting and disruption.
Linda, it sounds like you're advocating for splitting up families. I don't like that.
Not but, splitting up.
No, I get you. I get you. I like
together
yeah,
reasonably.
Let me cherry pick from Linda. I appreciate the call. Thoughtful, controversial, and I disagree with a lot of the premises because I think. But what I do like is the use of school psychologists in a more activist way to teach family responsibility, to teach the importance of fatherhood. I think that you've got to teach. I mean, the first thing you've got to teach is birth control. You've got to let kids, they get sexualized so early now. When you look at these girls, these 15-year-old girls wearing, that were involved in that brawl in McDonald's or that beatdown in McDonald's with the, you know, micro mini shorts on and, you know, it's the sexualization. I lament it. It's way too soon. You want to keep them little girls. You want to keep them in, I mean, without being unrealistic, American Girl dolls and Barbies and Cinderella and Frozen. And just, you want to, that's the job of the father to keep that to the extent that it is. I'm not Ozzie and Harriet here, but I am very concerned and protective of my children. And I do the inventory and, I'm not father of the year, but at least I take my responsibility seriously. And what you try to do is keep them away from that. They're going to be young women in the blink of an eye, but not in fifth grade, not in sixth grade. I mean, just. You have boys. What are you nodding? You don't know from what.
Well,
you...
no, it's the same thing though. You want to keep them
as innocent
as long as you can, because the minute it goes the other way, the whole life changes, and so many goes in so many different directions, and it's so much fun now. I don't want it to change. I know it will though.
Robert in Connecticut. Hey, Robert, what's up?
Hey, Ron. How are you? Thank
Good.
You. First of all, I want to say great job on Celebrity Apprentice. I mean,
thank you.
Well, those, what was it, $750,000 you raised?
Yeah, $725,000. It was terrific for life's work and their new family autism center. It's I'm very proud of that, but thanks for the mention.
You did a great job. I'm a big fan of the show. Well, the point I wanted to make was, you know, I didn't vote for Obama back in 08, obviously in 12 either, for one simple reason, because he was probably the least qualified candidate I've ever seen. He never governed. He never owned a business. He basically did nothing, and even as a senator. But here's my point. He pointed out in 07, along with Colin Powell and Bill Cosby, not at the same time, not the same day of week, but in that time frame, each of these three prominent, respected black gentlemen brought up the issue of lack of a father figure in the modern black family. And each of those three were summarily dismissed by Jackson and Sharpton, and even called one of them, I think it was Colin Powell, not a real black. And therein lies the problem. I believe it's Jackson and Sharpton because they are total enablers, and it's almost a lost cause as long as these two are the ones that are the voice representing the black culture. It's lost.
Well, I can't say I disagree. Let me just modify it a bit. One of the reasons I'm so stubborn in my defense of Al Sharpton, probably the most unpopular man in white America, is because I have been at his church and I have heard him lecture to preach, to young black men to pick their pants up, to take responsibility. I don't think that's the emphasis of his activities, however, and he certainly doesn't get the big ink for that job. That job is not a glamorous job, and it is fraught with the danger that Colin Powell and Bill Cosby and the president of the United States did encounter from the activists, from the Jacksons and from the Sharptons. You speak up about black family, even Tavis Smiley, who I adore. I'm a huge fan of Tavis Smiley, my friend who runs the PBS program. He has the big interview program along with Charlie Rose there. You know, he's also critical of the president when he lectures, quote unquote, black men. But I think that that guidance, that kind of spirited, philosophical discussion is really necessary on a regular basis. And I really do. One of the reasons I lament the decline and fall of Bill Cosby is he absolutely had it right. And to see him become, you know, a punchline or, you know, this monster he's being portrayed, maybe true, I don't know, is disheartening because it allows his critics to say, see, he was lecturing black people and look what he was doing, you know, grabbing every piece of snatch he could on the side, you know. Could I say that?
You did.
From New York, for New York, live, local, on it. Harold, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
We had an event yesterday. This is the ballgame theme. Okay, we'll do Guns Gunselman's weekly report. The A-Rod report.
This is the cheesiest music I've ever heard.
Really?
They don't have a better version of this?
I mean, well, at least give me the home run call.
Caught on and hammered. Deep left center field. Goodbye, sir. Alex Rodriguez with his first home run.
First home run since when, Guns?
Since September 13th, 2013. And all praise A-Rod. He hit the ball out of the park in spring training. That was the big story for A-Rod this week, as we give you his update each Friday here on the Geraldo Show. It was that, and then he also played third base for the first time, and he grounded a ball. Wow, with the mitt, he was able to get he grounded the ball and threw it to first base, even though he's been doing this for 39 years, and that was the big thing. Now, the other funny thing is, so A-Rod hit this home run, and all of a sudden everyone's blown up. Oh yeah, he's back. He hit a home run against a pitcher who was probably like 19 years old, not even gonna make it in the majors, like, because it's spring training still. It was a fastball right down the middle. So, like, Twitter and social networks, everyone's freaking out because, like, oh, he's back. But the official Yankee account, Twitter account, was doing play-by-play of the game and didn't even mention it.
So didn't mention he hit a home run?
Not at all. Not even in the game recap. They didn't tweet out that they hit it. So they completely, they even mentioned Jacoby Ellsbury got a single for his first at-bat as a Yankee in the same game, but didn't even mention it on A-Rod. So clearly, whoever's running the account has something against A-Rod. So all these fans were tweeting the Yankees, like, what are you doing? You can't do that.
Is this the first Guns Gunselman, the Guns report on A-Rod? We're going to bring it to you every Friday deep into the season. Until I get sick of it, but I'm interested so far because I love the Yankees. Is this the first time he's ever hit a home run that he wasn't on the juice?
It seems that way. Yeah, actually.
I mean, all those years when he was a Texas Ranger, was he all?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, all those years he definitely was doing it then. And then maybe towards the end of 2013, he might not have been on the juice as far as we know. But he was probably on something else. You know, just that he was able to mask it.
So, are you changing your assessment based on his performance?
Oh yeah, great. A-Rod hit a home run against against me. Somebody pitched like me. No, absolutely not. And here's the thing with the Yankee fans, you got two types right now with A-Rod, which is why he's getting so much attention. One, there's people like me who hate him and want him to do horrible because he's a cheat and like he dated Madonna, he loved old women, like this creepy guy.
So envious.
And the other side is that the Yankees really have nobody else this year on their team. They're not, for the first time in forever, the Mets might be better than the Yankees. So people are like, we need A-Rod to do something. We need him to do well. So.
Well, I thank you, Guns. We'll tune in next week to see the continuing soap opera A-Rod. Just want to give a quick shout out. We're at Love Heels last night, Eric and I. Eric Valencia, our pal, was honored, and we were pleased to be there. And a quick shout out to Jeffrey and Lise Wilkes. Who are they? The parents of David Wilkes, who was Isabella's prom date, my daughter Isabella's prom date. So finally, they've been dating 4 years. I finally meet the Pish's parents.
They've been hiding, huh?
Jeffrey and Lise Wilkes, welcome.
Did you like them?
I like them a lot. Yeah, I like them.
Really?
Very nice people.
Did you really like them, or are you just saying that because we're on the radio? And after we get off, you're going to tell me how much you hate them.
I like them very much.
Yeah, sure you do.
They're Jewish. How could they be bad? They're nice people. Have a great weekend, everybody.
God.